work.
And there's a little peace here. Every night the sound. Last night I... Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Please, Mr. Burton, I've got to be leaving this morning.
How are you going to get into town?
I took the liberty of calling one of the stores, and the owner's sending his son out with a car.
All right, Millie.
As soon as you give me my wages, I'll wait outside. I'm afraid to stay inside any longer.
Why, of all the absurd...
If you value your life...
And in here. Oh, I'm dreaming things. It's utter nonsense. Millie's got me all upset. Now, my test tubes. My experiment. The test tube's knocked to the floor. I'm not dreaming this. This is too real. I need Karmer. He'll solve this. Hello. I want to put in a long-distance call. I'd like to speak to Lyman Karmer in New Cardin. Yes. Yes, you've got it right. Lyman Karmer in New Cardin. The telephone number is...
Father, do we have to drive into the wilds, young man?
We're almost there now.
Life of me, I can't figure why Jim wants to hide himself away miles from civilization.
Well, this new man ain't been out there but a few days. A
few days too many, if you ask me.
I drove out here yesterday. I picked up a woman who'd been working out there. Wanted to go back to the city.
Not Millie.
Seems like that was the name she gave.
Well, what's up?
I couldn't rightly tell you, mister. Just couldn't tell you.
Didn't seem to be strangely urgent about something last night.
Well, look, mister. You can see the lights of the house now. See about 8-10 right away through the tree.
Oh, yeah. What sort of a place is it?
It's quite a place, mister. Really something in its day.
Old house,
Yes, sir. I guess no one's lived in it for years. Old man Chimler knows it. He's lived in town as long as I can remember. Yeah, this is the drive leading up to the house. Lined with trees on both sides. House never gets no real daylight into it. Here we are, sir. Now get your bag.
Oh, never mind. I can take it. You young men?
Oh, thank you, mister. It's more than it's worth.
That's all right.
Anything I can do for you, just call the general store and ask for Mark.
Thanks. I'll do that.
Lyman.
Jim. Hello, Jim.
I began to think you didn't make the train.
Yeah, I was 40 minutes late.
Come on in. Nice of you to come.
You old recluse. The idea of picking a spot no man ever heard of.
Bring your things into the sitting room. We'll go upstairs later.
All right. Well. This is nice.
Sit down.
Thanks.
Yes, Millie got it fixed up pretty well before she went back to the city. My laboratory is right off this room. Everything handy. You had dinner, Lyman?
Yes, Jim. On the train.
Good. I'm not much at fixing meals.
The young man, Mark, from the general store, said that Millie had left you. What's the idea?
I'll tell you all about it. That's why I called you.
Well, it's nice here, Jim, but I can't see why you chose a place so far away from everywhere.
Oh, I like it here.
Well, that's reason enough, I guess. Millie coming back to take care of you?
No. No, I'm afraid not. Lyman, Millie left because she was certain that this house is haunted.
Oh, Jim.
I called you last night because I remember a story you once told. Story of a haunted house. You told it as if you gave credence to the tale.
Is that so?
I remember well. That's why I wanted you here.
Jim, you don't think by any chance that this house is haunted, do you?
I'm not so sure but what I do.
Oh, absurd.
You think it impossible?
Why, naturally.
You didn't talk that way when you were telling us that evening of a place off the coast you knew that was haunted.
That was a fireside tale. Quite different from reality.
Lyman, it's only a short time until midnight. Will you come into the laboratory with me? You sit in there with me for a little while and see if the same things that happened last night occur again.
Of course.
If the same things do occur again, I shall be convinced that Millie was right. I shall be quite sure that something does happen.
Does haunt the house.
Nearly midnight, Jim.
Did you check the door into the laboratory to see if it's closed tightly?
I checked it.
You're convinced it's securely fastened?
Yes. Just striking midnight.
Yes. This was the hour last night.
What are we to watch for?
The door first. The door into this laboratory. Listen. It sounded as if someone has his hand on the doorknob. Look.
What? It's opening.
Yes. Just as it did before.
There's no wind tonight.
Last night. Iman, do you feel the presence of someone in this room? Someone besides us?
No, I don't.
I do.
What is it?
Once again, it was as if something brushed past me. Touched my shoulder. Over on the table. Watch my ledger. You see? The pages of my ledger are turning. As if a hand is on them.
Jim, I can't believe my eyes. It's incredible.
Now look. On the workbench. See? Something is moving those test tubes. I'm going to stop this before all my experimental work is ruined.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to walk over there, put my hands on the rack. Lyman, something touched my hand. Something I felt like sharp nails digging into the flesh.
Oh, it's your nerves, Burton.
Lyman, there's something in this room. Something that moves about in here. Some unseen thing that enters the door and moves in this room.
Don't let your imagination run away with you, Jim.
There is a thing in the house beyond scientific explanation. You know it. It's something vital and alive. Thing of power and locomotion. And it's up to us to find out what it is.
Well, we might as well look through this room. No use overlooking anything.
Seems silly, doesn't it? I'm not going to find anybody in these rooms.
Didn't you say that Millie heard things upstairs?
So she said. She complained the very first night we were here that someone entered her room.
She didn't see anyone?
No. She didn't see any more than we did just a while ago downstairs.
Now that the incident of downstairs is past, it seems to me that it never happened. Perhaps it was your power of suggestion that made us both think we saw movement. Well, nothing out of the ordinary in this room.
No.
What do you say we forget it and get some sleep, hmm?
All right. We're not going to discover anything tonight, I guess.
Did you talk to the man who sold you the house, Jim?
Chimlin?
Yes.
Sure, he brought me out here after I chanced upon the place. We went all through it together.
Of course, he didn't say why the house had stood unoccupied for a long time.
Yes, he did. Said that after his wife died, he wanted to live in town. But he was getting too old to keep up a place like this.
Uh-huh.
Said that up to this time, he couldn't find anyone who could afford to buy it. Oh, well. I'll go downstairs and get your things and bring them up to your room. Lyman, how was that?
Something downstairs.
It came from the laboratory. I know it did. It's the only place where there's so much glass.
Don't get upset, Jim.
Great heavens, look.
Well, of all things.
Everything in the room smashed. Equipment that's taken me months to build. Everything ruined.
Jim, some human has been in here. Someone who's trying to stop your experiment by destroying your equipment. Wipe out your work.
Oh, ruined. It'll take months to arrive at this point in my experiment again.
Someone has been hiding downstairs here, Jim. We've got to find out where and who it is.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now the hermit.
In the house, intent upon destroying all that Jim Burton creates in his laboratory? Or is it an unseen force, as Jim said earlier in the evening? An unseen force with power and locomotion that lives in the old house. Eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done. Jim Burton and his friend Lyman Karma sit in the laboratory. Just a few minutes ago, the clock struck midnight. Right now, Burton is busily engaged building up step by step the experiment which has been ruined the night before. Lyman Karma is watching him.
Jim, don't you think you ought to knock off for the night? You work steadily all day.
There's so much time lost that I have to make up, Lyman.
But certainly aren't going to have any visitor tonight.
There's nothing left for them to destroy now.
Tomorrow I'll go into town and inquire around. Think I should go to see old man Chimlin. Ask him to tell me something about the place. Well, maybe he can put us on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone today, but I wanted to make sure. I wanted to see if we'd have the same experience of last night. You, going to work much longer?
At least an hour.
It's way past midnight. Guess I'll go upstairs.
Okay.
If you want anything, call me.
All right, Lyman. Thanks a lot for staying over. It's a great help.
Yes, if we can find out what it is or who it is that's causing this trouble.
We'll find out. Good night.
Good night.
Let's see. Next step is to unite the two chemicals to form step B. Where's that ledger? Yes. The next step I performed was... Oh, wait. Pages in the ledger. Page 5, 6. A page is missing from here. Every step I'd worked out and put down is torn out of this book. Oh. Now, what is it? What is it that dogs my trail and won't let me do this work? Step by step, I'll have to work it all over again. What? Someone at the door again. Is that you, Lyman? No. No, it isn't. Just as before, I feel the presence of some person in this room. As if they were standing over me. Look. What do you want? Where is it, you...
Something around my neck. Something choking me. Choking me. Jim. Jim, help. Help me. Jim, help. Help. Help.
Fallen to the floor. Jim. But great heaven. His whole face is burned by the stuff he was working with. Hello. Oh, for heaven's sake, hurry. Hello, operator. Send a doctor to the old Chimlin place right away. Hurry. There's been a terrible accident. Man's face is almost burned away.
Well, Doctor?
I'm afraid it's quite hopeless. If he lives, his sight will be gone. His face horribly scarred.
Poor Jim. We'd only gotten out of this place last night.
Did you call Asa Chimlin, as I asked you to do?
Yes, he should be here any minute.
I'll wait, then.
Sit down, Doctor.
After the story you told me about the experience you've had, I think it's up to Chimlin to tell his story.
You sound as if it was something very mysterious. Something that Jim should have been told before he bought this place from Chimlin. If it had been told, it would have saved him the agonies he's going through right now.
Mr. Karma, what I know has given me in professional confidence. What others in the town might have told you would have been gossip. No one tells gossip about Asa Chimlin.
How so, Doctor?
Well, he's the owner of many mortgages, many notes. A man of wealth and power in our community.
I see.
Oh, there's a car turning in the drive, Mr. Karma.
It must be Chimlin.
I'll go up to Mr. Burton again. Call me if Chimlin refuses to speak.
Well, thank you.
Hello, sir.
Well, hello, Mark. Where's Mr. Chimlin?
No, he didn't come, sir. He called at our house and got me to drive out and bring you this note.
Well, come in.
Why? I reckon I better not, sir.
Why not?
I reckon I'd just as leave stay outside of this house, if you don't mind.
Well, come on in just a moment while I read this note. Nothing can harm you in the daytime.
Well, all right. Just till you read the note.
Come in here. Sit down while I read the note.
Yes.
Mart, what made you say you'd rather not come inside this house?
Oh, I can't say, sir. Really, I can't. Mr. Chimlin would get even with my dad if I said any more. You see, he about owns our store.
I wouldn't tell Chimlin. Come now.
Well, sir, you see, the Chimlins, their daughter, she wasn't quite right, and she died out here. And Mrs. Chimlin, she hanged herself. Folks have always been scared of this house because of that.
I see. Why did Mrs. Chimlin hang herself?
I don't rightly know.
Perhaps the doctor can tell us.
Hello, Mark.
Hello, Doc.
Chimlin didn't come. Sent this note saying he would refund Mr. Burton's money and take the house back again. Says nothing more.
Mm-hmm.
But Mart here has volunteered to tell me that there were two deaths in this old house. One, a hanging.
That's right.
Mrs. Chimlin?
Yes.
And the girl?
Her case was hopeless. 18, she had a mind of a child of 4. They took her everywhere, but to no avail. Time after time, Mrs. Chimlin pleaded with me to put the girl to sleep, to end her misery. I couldn't do that. She hated me for it. Her hate grew until her mind was unsettled. One day, she took it upon herself to end the girl's life. Then, realizing what she'd done, she hanged herself in the room Mr. Burton has been using for his laboratory.
If Mr. Chimman knew, we'd told us,
don't you? Oh, that's all right, Mart. There is any truth in the fact that an unseen force lives in this house, and you'll see how hard it is for me to believe that. Then why did it seek vengeance on Mr. Burton?
I have never believed in supernatural force any more than you. But remember, I've seen it at work in this house. And as for seeking vengeance on Jim, Doctor, he was working on an experiment to prolong life. A discovery which might have added untold years to the life of a human being. And this is something that the spirit of the woman who hanged herself did not want. That's why it destroyed the experiments.
And that's why it destroyed Jim Burton. He died just before I came downstairs.
Force was the spirit of a woman who took her own life. A woman who could not rest in her grave. A woman who returned to destroy anything that might prolong life. Yes. She killed Jim Burton by the power of supernatural force. Turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
From sometime during the Second World War, it's been The Hermit's Cave with House of Murder. Well, that's all we have time for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our listening nightly to our favorite show, radio. I miss you, sodio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.
West, oh, no further west than Newark. Huh.
California is a great country, they tell me.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Sure is, from all I can hear. Say, could I have some more coffee?
Sure. Oh, sorry, I stuck my finger in that butter. Wait, I'll get a clean sock.
No, that's all right, that's all right. You know, it was a silly habit I got when I was a kid, smearing butter around a saucer like that.
Oh, I'll get you a clean one.
No, it's fine. Say, you don't mind if I drink this over the office, do you? We're going to press soon, I guess I better get back.
That's okay with me. Just leave a dime deposit.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. There you are.
Carefully preserving the fingerprinted coffee saucer in his icebox, the amateur detective editor writes Chief Davis for Rogan's fingerprint and finds to his chagrin that his suspect has probably been telling the truth about never being west of Newark. At least he is not Rogan. So months pass, and Rogan remains at large, and then one day, Inspector Davidson of the homicide detail calls Con Dapper and Ryan into his office.
Well, here's the letter I thought would interest you boys.
Yeah, what's it about?
Rogan.
Well, let's see it. Hey, listen to this. Do you really intend paying $500 reward for the information leading to the arrest of Rogan? Because if you do, I can tell you where to find him. Just write me, care of General Delivery, San Francisco.
Probably another one of those nuts.
Well, what did you do about it?
A Well, I wrote and told him the reward absolutely would be paid. And we'll see what comes of it.
Following up this latest clue, San Francisco officers, working under the direction of Chief Detective Charles D'Alea of the San Francisco Police Department, throws a stakeout on the house pointed out to them. Seeing Rogan enter and leave the place several times, on the night of October 11th, 1933, they close in on the place.
Open up! Now we'll have to break it open. The men all posted around the house?
Yeah.
All right, let's tear down this thing.
Remember your gas, you may need it.
I already have.
Throw your flashlight this way. Well, he's not in there.
No,
I'm
not in here.
Now, wait a minute. What? I just heard a sound down the hall here.
Look, the door's closed.
All right, let's open it. Hear him?
Yeah.
Come on out of there. I will give you three, and then I'll shoot through the door. One. Two.
Okay, just shoot, I'm coming.
Hello, Rogan. I'm mighty glad to see you.
I ain't glad to see you.
I don't suppose so.
If you'd have come and see you later, you'd never have had me.
Yeah, how's that?
I was slamming that way, you'd never have got me.
Well, we figured we'd better pay your call pretty soon.
Yeah?
Well, how about it, Rogan? Are you ready to talk about that job down in L.A.?
Yeah, I'll talk. Let's get out of here. I'll talk as soon as we get to headquarters.
Attorney was waiting for Rogan at headquarters, and on his advice, Rogan refused to talk. Lieutenant Ryan went to San Francisco a couple of days later and brought Rogan back to face trial. A speedy trial was scheduled and successfully prosecuted by Deputy District Attorneys Grant Cooper and George Stallman. Rogan's attorney tried to enter a plea of guilty to murder in the first degree in exchange for a life sentence, but the prosecution refused this move, and on December the 5th, Rogan was found guilty of murder in the first degree with no recommendation for clemency. On December the 15th, 1933, Rogan was given the death penalty by Judge Fletcher Boren. He was sent to San Quentin in February 1934 and fought his hanging. But on February the 8th, 1935, he was hanged by the neck until dead. Thank you, Captain Wallace.
Attention all authority, cancellation broadcast 5. Inspector, this case is now in custody. That's all.
From December of 1933, it's been Calling All Cars and the Burma White Case. In a moment, a rare World War II rendition of The Hermit's Cave and The House of Murder, as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Hermit's Cave sent chills up the spines during the war years. Skilled use of sound effects by Dwight Houser set the show up nicely. There was wind, there was howling, there was a feeling of doom and gloom, too. And finally, there was the old hermit, standing at the mouth of his cave, warning the weak of heart not to listen. The Hermit's Cave mangled its victims in the grand old radio tradition. The real interest in the Hermit's Cave lay in its personnel. Youngsters Bill Foreman and William Conrad were its producers. The music was by Rex Corey. Stories were written by Lou Houston and Herbert Connor. The series was produced at station KMPC in Los Angeles and syndicated from 1940 through 1943. The Hermit, that voice of Rusty Nails, came from the parched throat of Mel Johnson. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear, sometime during the Second World War, and The Hermit's Cave with The House of Murder, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air.
And now the hermit.
Hello,
The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Ah, have you heard the story? The house of murder, eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Mr. Burton, I'd like my wages, if you please.
What's that?
Yes, Mr. Burton.
Well, Millie, you're dressed to go out. My breakfast hasn't been served.
That's right, Mr. Burton. I'm leaving right now, and I'd like my wages, if you please.
Well, this is preposterous.
Oh, it's something bad, all right.
You can't go without giving me more notice than this.
I'm sorry, but I can't stay.
What's it all about?
This house, Mr. Burton, it's this house. It's truly haunted.
Nonsense. It's just because we've only been in the house for a few days. It's strange to you yet.
Don't get over being strange. It gets worse every night.
Oh, ridiculous.
Well, you can say all you want to Mr. Burton, but I'm leaving. I'll work for you in the city. I've been faithful to you for a good many years, and I'll go right on being faithful if you'll move back to the city again.
Millie, I can't run my life to suit those who work for me. I purchased this house in the country in order that I might have peace and quiet for my work.
There's little peace here. Every night, the sounds. Last night, I... Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Please, Mr. Burton, I've got to be leaving this morning.
How are you going to get into town?
I took the liberty of calling one of the stores, and the owner's sending his son out with a car.